For the past 2.5 years now, I have been living in the north of the Scottish Highlands. And when I say north, I mean as far north as you can possibly go. I live in a region called Caithness, in a small coastal town of Thurso, which is actually the northmost town on the British mainland. I have always wanted to live in the Scottish Highlands, which seemed a far cry from my gloomy hometown in Yorkshire, England. And when my dad and his partner told me they'd bought an old house up here, I jumped at the opportunity. From what they told me, Caithness sounded like the perfect destination. There were seals and otters in the town's river, dolphins and orcas in the sea, and at certain times of the year, you could see the northern lights in the night sky. But despite my initial excitement of finally getting to live in the Scottish Highlands, full of beautiful mountains, amazing wildlife, and vibrant culture, I would soon learn the region I had just moved to was far from the idealistic destination I had dreamed of. So many tourists flood here each summer, but when you actually choose to live here, in a harsh and freezing coastal climate, this place feels more like a purgatory. More than that, this place actually feels cursed. This probably just sounds like superstition on my part, but what almost convinces me of this belief, more so than anything else here, is that disturbing things have washed up on shore. Each one supposedly worse than the last. And they all have to do with death. The first thing I discovered here happened maybe a couple of months after I first moved to Caithness. In my spare time, I took to exploring the coastline around the Thurso area. It was one of these days that I started to explore what was east of Thurso. On the right-hand side of the mouth of the river is an old ruin of a castle, but past that leads to a cliff trail around the eastern coastline. I first started exploring this trail with my dog, Maisie, on a very windy, rainy day. We trekked down the cliff trail and onto the bedrocks by the sea, and making our way around the curve of a cliff base, we then found something. Littered all over the bedrock floor was what seemed like dozens of dead seabirds. They were everywhere. It was as though they had just fallen out of the sky and washed ashore. I just assumed they either crashed into the rocks or were swept into the sea due to the stormy weather. Feeling like this was almost a warning, I decided to make my way back home rather than risk being blown off the cliff trail. It wasn't until a day or so after, when I went back there to explore further down the coast, that a woman with her young daughter stopped me. Shouting across the other side of the road through the heavy rain, the woman told me she had just come from that direction, but that there was a warning sign for dog walkers, warning them the area was infested with dead seabirds that had died from bird flu. She said the warning had told dog walkers to keep their dogs on a leash at all times, as bird flu was contagious to them. This instantly concerned me, as the day before, my dog, Maisie, had gotten close to the dead seabirds to sniff them. But there was something else. Something about meeting this woman had struck me as weird. Although she was just a normal woman with her young daughter, they were walking a dog that was completely identical to Maisie. A small, black and white border collie. Maybe that's why the woman was so adamant to warn me, because in my dog she saw her own, heading in the direction of danger. But why this detail was so weird to me was because it almost felt like an omen of some kind. She was leading with her dog, identical to mine, away from the contagious dead birds, as though I should have been doing the same. It almost felt as though it wasn't just the woman who was warning me, but something else. Something disguised as a coincidence. Curious as to what this warning sign was, I thanked the woman for letting me know, before continuing with Maisie towards the trail. We reached the entrance of the castle ruins, and on the entrance gate, I saw the sign she had warned me about. The sign was bright yellow and outlined with contagion symbols. If the woman's warning wasn't enough to make me turn around, this sign definitely was. And so, I headed back into town, all the while worrying that my dog might now be contagious. Thankfully, Maisie would be absolutely fine. Although I would later learn that bird flu was common to the region, and so dead seabirds wasn't anything new, what I would stumble upon a year later, washed up on the town's beach, would definitely be far more sinister. In the summer of the following year, like most days, I walked with Maisie along the town's beach, which stretched from one end of Thurso Bay to the other. I never really liked this beach, because it was always covered in stacks of seaweed, which not only stunk of sulfur, but attracted swarms of flies and midges. Even if they weren't on you, you couldn't help but feel like you were being bitten all over your body. The one thing I did love about this beach was that on a clear enough day, you could see in the distance one of the islands of Orkney. On a more cloudy or foggy day, it was as if this particular island was never there to begin with, and all you instead see is the ocean and a false horizon. On one particular summer's day, I was walking with Maisie along the beach. I had let her off her lead, as she loved exploring and finding new smells from the ocean. She was rummaging through the stacks of seaweed when suddenly, Maisie had found something. I went to see what it was, and I realized it was something I'd never seen before. What we found lying on top of a layer of seaweed was an animal skeleton. I wasn't sure what animal it belonged to exactly, but it was either a sheep or a goat. There were many farms in Caithness, and across the sea in Orkney. My best guess was that an animal on one of Orkney's coastal farms must have fallen off a ledge or cliff, drowned, and its remains eventually washed up here. Although I was initially taken back by this skeleton grinning up at me with its molar-like teeth, something else about this animal quickly caught my eye. The upper body was indeed skeletal remains, completely picked white clean. But the lower body was all still there. It still had its hooves and all its wet fur. The fur was dark gray, and as far as I could see, all the meat underneath was still intact. Although disturbed by this carcass, I was also very confused. What I didn't understand was, why had the upper body of this animal been completely picked off, whereas the lower parts hadn't even been touched? What was weirder, the lower body hadn't even decomposed yet. It still looked fresh. I can still recollect the image of this dead animal in my mind's eye. At the time, one of the first impressions I had of it was that it seemed almost satanic. It reminded me of the image of Baphomet, a goat's head on a man's body. What made me think this was not only the dark goat-like legs, but also the position the carcass was in. Although the carcass belonged to a goat or sheep, the way the skeleton was positioned almost made it appear hominid. The skeleton was laid on its back, with an arm and leg on each side of its body. However, what I also have to mention about this incident is that, like the dead seabirds and the warnings of the concerned woman, this skeleton also felt like an omen, a bad omen. I thought it might have been at the time, and to tell you the truth, it was. Not long after finding this skeleton washed up on the town's beach, my personal life suddenly takes a very dark and somewhat tragic downward spiral. I almost wish I could go into the details of what happened, as it would only support the idea of how much a bad omen this skeleton would turn out to be. But it's all rather personal. While I've still lived in this godforsaken place, I have come across one more thing that has washed ashore. And although I can't say whether it was more or less disturbing than the Baphomet-like skeleton I had found, it was definitely bone-chilling. 6 or so months later, and into the Christmas season, I was still recovering from what personal thing had happened to me, almost foreshadowed by the Baphomet skeleton. It was almost around this time that I'd just gotten out of a long-distance relationship, and was only now finding closure from it. Feeling as though I'd finally gotten over it, I decided I wanted to go on a long hike by myself along the cliff trail east of Thurso. And so, the day after Christmas, Boxing Day, I got my backpack together, packed a lunch for myself, and headed out at 6 a.m. The hike along the trail had taken me all day, and by the evening, I had walked so far that I actually discovered what I first thought was a ghost town. What I found was an abandoned port settlement, which had the creepiest-looking disperse of old stone houses, as well as what looked like the ruins of an ancient round tower. As it turned out, this was actually the Castletown Heritage Center, a tourist spot. It seemed I had walked so far around the rugged terrain that I was now 10 miles outside of Thurso. On the other side of this settlement were the distant cliffs of Dunnet Bay, which, compared to the cliffs I had already trekked along, were far grander. Although I could feel my legs finally begin to give way, and already anticipating a long journey back along the trail, I decided that I was going to cross the bay and reach the cliffs, and then make my way home. Considering what I would find there, This is the point in the journey where I should have stopped. By the time I was making my way around the bay, it had become very dark. I had already walked past more than half of the bay, but the cliffs didn't feel any closer. It was at this point when I decided I really needed to turn around, as at night, walking back along the cliff trail was going to be dangerous. And for the most parts of the trail that led down to the base of the cliffs, I really couldn't afford for the tide to cut off my route. I made my way back through the abandoned settlement of the Heritage Center, and at night, this settlement definitely felt more like a ghost town. Shining my phone flashlight in the windows of the old stone houses, I was expecting to see a face or something peer out at me. What surprisingly made these houses scarier at night were a handful of old fishing boats that had been left outside them. The wood they were made from looked very old, and the paint had mostly been weathered off. But what was more concerning was that in this abandoned ghost town of a settlement, I wasn't alone. A van had pulled up, with three or four young men getting out. I wasn't sure what they were doing exactly, but they were burning things into a trash can. What it was they were burning, I didn't know. But as I made my way out of the abandoned settlement, every time I looked back at the men by the van, at least one of them were watching me. The abandoned settlement, the creepy men burning things by their van, this wasn't even the creepiest thing I came across on that hike. The creepiest thing I found actually came as soon as I decided to head back home, before I was even back at the Heritage Center. Finally making my way back, I tried retracing my own footprints along the beach. It was so dark by now that I needed to use my phone flashlight to find them. As I wandered through the darkness, with only the dim brightness of the flashlight to guide me, I came across something. Ahead of me, I could see a dark silhouette of something in the sand. It was too far away for my flashlight to reach, but it seems to me that it was just a big rock, so it wasn't all too concerning. But for some reason, I wasn't 100% convinced either. The closer I get to it, the more I think it could possibly be something else. I was right on top of it now, and the silhouette didn't look as much like a rock as I thought it did. If anything, it looked more like a very big fish, almost like a tuna fish. I didn't even realize fish could get that big in and around these waters. Still unsure whether this was just a rock or a dead fish of sorts, but too afraid to shine my light on it, I decided I was going to touch it with my foot. My first thought was that I was going to feel hard rock beneath me, only to realize the darkness had played a trick on me. I lifted up my foot and pressed it on the dark silhouette. But what I felt wasn't hard rock. It was squidgy. My first reaction was a little bit of a shock, because if this wasn't a rock like I originally thought, then it was something else, and had probably once been alive. Almost afraid to shine my light on whatever this was, I finally worked up the courage to do it, hoping this really is just a very big fish. I reluctantly shine my light on the dark, squidgy thing. But what the light reveals is something else. It was a seal. A dead seal pup. Seal carcasses do occasionally wash up in this region, and it wasn't even the first time I saw one. But as I studied this dead seal with my flashlight, feeling my own skin crawl as I did it, I suddenly noticed something. Something alarming. This seal pup had a chunk of flesh bitten out of it. For all I knew, this poor seal pup could have been hit by a boat, and that's what caused the wound. But the wound was round and basically a perfect bite shape. Depending on the time of year, there are orcas around these waters, which obviously hunt seals, but this bite mark was no bigger than what a fully grown seal could make. Did another seal do this? I know other animals will sometimes eat their young, but I never heard of seals doing this. But what was even worse than the idea that this pup was potentially killed by its own species, was that this pup, this poor little seal pup, was missing its skull. Not its head, its skull. The skin was all still there, but it was empty, lying flat down against the sand. Just when I think it can't get any worse than this, I leave the seal to continue making my way back, when I come across another dark silhouette In the sand ahead, I go towards it, and what I find is another dead seal pup. But once more, this one also had an identical wound, a fatal bite mark. And just like the other one, the skull was missing. I could accept that they'd been killed by either a boat or, more likely from the evidence, an attack from another animal. But how did both of these seals, with the same exact wounds in the same exact place, also have both of their skulls missing? I didn't understand it. These seals hadn't been ripped apart, that they only had one bite mark each. Would the seal or seals that killed them really remove their skulls? I don't know. I still don't, but what I do know is that both of these carcasses were identical, which was strange. They had clearly died the same way. I more than likely knew how they died, but what happens to their skulls? As it happens, it's actually common for seal carcasses to be found headless. Apparently, if they've been tumbling around in the surf for a while, the head can detach from the body before washing ashore. The only other answer I could find was scavengers. Sometimes other animals will scavenge the body and remove the head. What other animals that was, I wasn't sure. But at least now I had more than one explanation as to why these seal pups were missing their skulls, even if I didn't know which answer that was. Although I had now reasoned out the cause of these missing skulls, it still struck me as weird as to how these seal pups were almost identical to each other in their demise. Maybe one of them could lose their skulls, but could they really both? I suppose so. Unlike the other things I found washed ashore, these dead seals thankfully didn't feel like much of an omen. This was just a common occurrence to the region. But growing up most of my life in Yorkshire, England, where nothing ever happens, and suddenly moving to what seemed like the edge of the world and finding mutilated remains of animals you only ever saw in zoos, it definitely stays with you. For the past 2.5 years that I've been here, I almost do feel as though this region is cursed. Not only because of what I found washed ashore. After all, dead things wash up here all the time. I almost feel like this place is cursed for a number of reasons. Despite the natural beauty all around, this place does somewhat feel like a purgatory. A depressive place that attracts lost souls from all around the UK. Many of the locals leave this place, migrating far down south to places like Glasgow. On the contrary, it seems a fair number of people, like me, have come from afar to live here. Mostly retired English couples, who, for some reason, choose this place above all others to live comfortably before the day they die. Perhaps like me, they thought this place would be idyllic, only to find out they were wrong. For the rest of the population, they're either junkies or convicted criminals, relocated here from all around the country. If anything, you could even say that Caithness is the UK's Alaska, where people come to get far away from their past lives or even themselves, but instead, amongst the natural beauty, are harnessed by a cold, dark, depressing climate. Maybe this place isn't actually cursed. Maybe it really is just a remote area in the far north of Scotland that has, for UK standards, a very unforgiving climate. Regardless, I won't be here for much longer. Maybe the ghosts that follow me here will follow wherever I may end up next. A fair bit of warning. If you do choose to come here, make sure you only come in the summer. But whatever you do, if you have your own personal demons of any kind, whatever you do, just don't move here.
Thank you for listening and delving with me into the dark together.
Please remember to leave a thumbs up and subscribe if you feel so inclined. The more engagement this video gets, the more YouTube will push my content to others.
Thus, the following will grow.
All stories read in this channel will be available on Spotify, iTunes, and just about everywhere else. Links in the description.
Thank you for listening and feeding the cause. We'll be seeing you.